Welcome to the Hunts Back Country podcast. This is episode number 460. And today we have a unique listener story as a father and son join us to talk about a doll sheep hunt. Now, in this case, the son was just 12 years old and it was his tag. They're residents of Alaska. So this was a do-it-yourself hunt in their home state. Still certainly a challenge for any 12-year-old to get into the backcountry and climb into sheep country. And what a wild experience for these guys to have. And I know this probably isn't your context for you listening to this, but there's still a lot to take away from this episode. I was encouraged with this episode. It helped me have some perspective on youth hunting, youth hunters, how to make it enjoyable for them, how to push them, how to stay patient, and a whole lot more. So one, this is a cool story, but two, if you have anyone in your life that you want to get into hunting, regardless of their age, I think this would be helpful for you as well. As always, guys, we appreciate your feedback and support of the show. If you can leave a rating or a review in whatever podcast app you're using, that would help us tremendously. And if you have any feedback or questions for us directly, just send an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Right now, though, let's dive into this conversation with Caleb and Clayton. Well, Caleb and Clayton, glad to chat with you guys today. Caleb, I'm glad that you finally got around to sending an email, because we're talking about a hunt that took place this last August, and it wasn't until the following March that you sent me an email, and you're like, I've been meaning to do this, and finally got around to it. And as soon as I saw your email, heard some of the story, saw some of the photos, I definitely knew I wanted to chat. So thanks for reaching out, man.
Yeah, life kind of gets busy, and if I'm not intentional about slowing things down, then things like this don't happen. But I'm glad I finally made the time.
I think you said in your email you were raised in Alaska. Is that correct?
Yeah, I consider myself Alaska grown. There's actually an agricultural brand up here called Alaska Grown that has that stamp on it in the grocery stores and stuff, and they have apparel. And so we always joke about being Alaska grown. But yeah, I was born here in the interior of Alaska. Funny, it's a little bit of a small world. The hospital that I was born in, I'm working at now. And we had a fairly large family. There's eight kids in my family growing up. And our parents would, despite being a large family, our parents would get us outdoors. And I can remember growing up going to public use cabins. Of course, my dad is the one that introduced me to hunting. And, you know, in those younger days, we didn't have a lot of resources. And maybe one of the fallacies about Alaska is that there's game everywhere, which there is a lot of opportunities in Alaska, but access is one of the big challenges. Access to game is one of the big challenges in Alaska. And so a lot of those younger days were just road hunting, slough hunting, some whatever you could access on the road system. And then as we started growing up and getting into the teenage years, getting our own jobs and stuff, there was more resources all the way around. And we started getting ATVs. I think I was 17 when I killed my first big game animal, which was a moose. And so, yeah, Alaska's just in my blood. I've traveled enough other places and I like visiting new places, but Alaska's home for sure.
And Clayton, you're on here, can probably relate to some of what your dad just said in terms of you're in the midst of being raised in Alaska and starting to hunt. Tell us a little bit about yourself, age and your grade, and kind of what got you interested to start hunting as well.
I was born in 2010, and I love Alaska. I'm glad I was born here. I'm in seventh grade. I was 12 when I did. I was 11 when I did my first, when I shot my first big game. It was a moose. And then I was 12 when I shot the sheep. So.
Yeah, we kind of joke with him that he doesn't realize how much exposure he's had or how good he's had it. My wife, we've been married, well, we're coming up on 15 years of marriage. But she's got an adventurous heart too, and she's not into roughing it as much as the boys are, but she goes out to moose camp with us every year, gets out in the outdoors, and at 9 months old, I can remember it was September of the year, 9 months old, we were out moose hunting. It was early September, the blueberries were still good. Clayton was in a down snowsuit. We had an ergo, so strapped him on the ergo on my back. We took an ATV trail out moose hunting, and him sitting in a blueberry patch while we're trying to get the ATV and stuff. But it's just kind of from a very young age, he's had a lot of exposure to the outdoors. And I think when you think about kids and their exposure or their interest in the outdoors, obviously there's obviously everybody has their own personality, right? And so some people are more drawn to the outdoors or drawn to, being in the outdoors. So you have to take some personality into account. But also I think it's important just the exposure at an early age to those things. And if their parents are interested in them, then they kind of naturally become interested in them. And certainly from a young age, he's had a lot of exposure to more exposure than what a lot of grown men, certainly at his age, more exposure than I had to some of the backcountry. So I don't know if he realized yet, but very privileged.
Clayton, at what point did you kind of start thinking about talking with your dad about or realize that sheep hunting was maybe something that you guys could do or that you wanted to do?
Probably about last spring. Well, probably in the middle of winter that we first started talking about it. That's when he first found out that there was a youth hunt and that you could do that before everybody else got into there, scared all the sheep away.
Yeah, actually, the area that we went into for this youth harvest hunt, I had been in the year before, and we'd taken a sheep out of there. Me and a good friend, Jed Waite, who we'll get into, but was a significant part of this story. And when I got back from that hunt in August, so that would have been August of 2022. Yeah, that would have been August of 2022. We'd gotten back late. I'd slept in. I remember getting up, and Clayton was in the kitchen. And when I came out, he goes, "So, Dad, could I have done this?" And I was like, "Well, it was a pretty tough grind, but you'd be surprised what you could do if you set your mind to it." And I don't know if that's what like planted the seed. And I don't remember exactly when I brought up to him the youth hunt, but the area that we had gone into, it had had a fair bit of pressure, which when I say pressure, I'm kind of a snub-nosed Alaskan where like if you see another person in the backcountry, you're like, it's too crowded back here.
Yeah.
When we had been in there, when me and Jed had been in there, I think had seen two other parties throughout the trip, and then I'd also known of another party that had kind of been in the general area. And so one of my thought process was like, it'd be really It'd be really fun to be back in this country when there's not a lot of pressure, just because pressure sometimes pushes those sheep around and their normal habits change a little bit. And that, so then when I thought about the youth, I was like, oh, that might be an opportunity to be in there with less pressure. And maybe those animals would be a little more accessible if there's not as much pressure. So I kind of, I don't know exactly when, but I kind of said, well, there is a youth hunt, we could think about that. And then after I said it, I was kind of like, oh boy, maybe I shouldn't have said that because there's a few more logistics to take in a 12-year-old into the back country. And I also, as I started thinking about it, I thought, I probably can't do this on my own, just me and him, because I'm gonna have to pack some of his gear, and I don't know how much he's gonna be capable of packing out if we get an animal down. And if I'm packing some of his gear and a full sheep, like that's gonna really be a grind. And so I kind of socialized the idea to Clayton, and then I just kind of left it because of the concern for logistics. And he hadn't said much about it. And it was, I think it was like March of the year. And I was having a conversation with my brother, and somehow sheep came up, and Clayton was standing there. He goes, yeah, Dad's taking me on a sheep hunt this year. And that's when I was kind of like, oh, like maybe this idea did stick with him.
Good
And
job,
oh,
Clayton. Put that on the gun.
do you remember that moment?
I think I do. I do remember that.
Yeah, you do remember that. But there were still logistics of like, well, I would need somebody else to go with us. And that's kind of a big ask to take a week off of work to go a week into the back country where you don't have a harvest ticket in your pocket yourself. And so I was, so I think I told him that. I just told him, hey, I'd love to do this, but there's some logistics we have to work out. So like, don't totally get your hopes up. We'll see how this plays out. And my friend Jed Waite, who's a very generous guy, he at some point popped by my office at work and had said, hey, you got any solid plans for sheep hunting this year? And I told him, well, Clayton had mentioned, like, I floated the youth hunt to Clayton, and he mentioned it the other day, and so I would like to pull that off. I just have to think about how that's all going to work out. And it was probably 2 weeks later he stopped back by my office, and he The way his shifts work there at the hospital, he sometimes works a week on, week off, or 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So his next stretch that he was on, he stops in my office and says, hey, if you want to do that youth hunt with your boy, he said, I'm in. Which was very, very generous of him to do. And so at that point, I was out of excuses, right? Like, I've got somebody else that's willing to go on this journey with us. Clayton's got an interest in doing it. So at that point, it was game on, and how do we plan for this and prep a kid to be in the back country and all those kind of logistics.
Clayton, how did you, what were some of the things you did once you knew you were going? What were some of the things that you did to get ready for this hunt?
Well, Dad always likes to take a little bit, like he always rushing to do things at the last minute. So I was always telling him that we need to get things done, and plus the pack that I had, that I had packed some of the moose meat out. That pack was a little too small for me at that point, so we had to buy a new pack, and we had to get all the stuff. Yeah, it was busy.
Yeah. How
Oh, and
about?
we did the pull some polar plunges leading up to the trip, which those were hard, but we got through them.
You guys did that just kind of as a exposure and kind of challenge type thing?
Yeah, I work in healthcare. My background is nursing, And so I can kind of be a little bit of a health nut. And there's a lot of positive benefits to polar plunging on the health and adrenal side of things for men. But also there is kind of that component of doing hard things or just making yourself uncomfortable that kind of builds some resiliency. And you know from your sheep hunt last year, Mark, that the backcountry of Alaska can be unpredictable weather-wise. And so I was just kind of thinking, how do I? He had already done some polar plunging with me in the past, just out of curiosity or fun. But I was kind of thinking, how do I build some resiliency leading up to this? And so I gave him a challenge of, can you do 30 days of polar plunging? There was a little bit of incentive with that, if we're honest. The challenge with gear with kids is that they grow so fast, right?
Yeah.
And so he needed a puffy jacket and some type of mid layer base, not really a base layer, but kind of a mid layer. And so I've been looking at a couple different products and not really, set on having to buy any one product, but Kuyu's kid line came on sale for 40% off. And I was like, well, this is affordable compared to some of the other stuff I was looking at. So I bought him their Peloton 240, which is a good kind of mid layer with wind blocking, and then their version of the kids' synthetic puffy jacket, and told them, you do your 30 days of polar plunging and you get this puffy jacket. And then we were also at the time working on one of Mountain Tough's workout programs. So I said, you do these workouts with me and then you can get your Peloton 240. So he had a little bit of motivation to get those pieces, and he did both of those. And I do think it helps just prep you for being cold. Obviously there's some science behind brown fat and all that with polar plunging, but I think really the intent was more to just build a little bit of resiliency for those times when you're going to be uncomfortable in the mountains.
How did you like those workouts, Clayton? Those are tough workouts, those Mountain Tough workouts.
Yeah, they were really tough, and they were some of the first real workouts I had done. They were really tough, but
yeah,
there weren't a whole lot of them. They were just really tough.
And you did those with your dad? You guys did them together?
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah, we have a few workout buddies that join us, which adds some accountability.
Obviously, as you said, Caleb, you've been in this country or at least this area before, but did you do any preseason scouting or just wait until season opens there in August and head in?
Yeah, for this trip, we've been in there the August before. And just how busy summer in Alaska is. Our summers are short, and we try to cram a lot into them. So we didn't get in for any scouting. We did have a pretty good, from being in there the year before, pretty good layout of where sheep had been when we had been in there, kind of what range systems they were in. So no scouting prep going in. Obviously, kind of kept track with what the weather was doing, and you can, depending on weather patterns and rainfall, depends on creek height and stuff like that. So I kind of kept tabs on weather systems in that area and what had been going on there, but we didn't get boots on the ground until we headed out for the hunt.
Clayton, what is, as we start to talk about the exact hunt, how do you remember it starting? What are some of your, I don't want to say first memories, but what stands out to you from the very beginning of the hunt?
We got up really early that morning. We got in the truck, and I remember thinking, because I'd only really been on moose hunts, and I remember thinking there was like hardly any gear. Everything was packed into our three packs, and it was like no action packers everywhere, no gear strewn throughout the truck. It was like three packs. So that was one of the first things I noticed. And then it took us, I think it was like, it was a long drive to get there. And then we had to stop. We just stopped at the ranger station and get our ATV ticket so that we could get out there without illegally doing it. So we got to the truck. We got to where we, the dirt road to get to where you get the side by side off the trailer and start getting out there is it's sketchy, and there's a lot of creeks that you have to cross with your truck. Plus, you have the trailer that's skidding against the ground and the rocks. So then we get to where we park, and there's like three other trucks, I think. And we couldn't understand what they were doing out there, but there was a group of like five side by sides that passed us and were going on the four wheeler path. So that was encouraging. But then we got the side by side unloaded and we got all the packs in, which usually I'm used to moose hunting, which takes an hour to get all the stuff packed into the side-by-side. But this took like 15 minutes. It was nice. Throw all the packs in. So that was nice.
That is very cool. It is like having packed for backpack hunts, whether it's a sheep hunt or something similar, and then packing for, whether it's other hunts or just other trips, it amazes me sometimes how much you can have. And it's like, wait a second, I packed for a 10-day sheep hunt and had, you know, one quarter of this many things. It's cool to me that stood out to you right away.
Yeah, obviously our annual moose hunt is a little more of a base camp type setup, and mom comes out with us and other families, so there's a little more gear that goes in on that. But even on those trips, I'm like, man, why do we have so much stuff? We can live out of a backpack for a week.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What Caleb just mentioned there, or sorry, what Clayton just mentioned there, Caleb, were you worried about seeing the other rigs and seeing the UTVs and other kind of traffic, or was that kind of expected for this jumping off point?
No. It's funny he brings that up because I kind of forgot about that part. But yeah, I didn't expect. I mean, it's a. You know, youth season's opening, so you expect that there might be a little bit of pressure. I don't know, I haven't paid attention to how it is in other states, but Alaska does have a handful of harvest ticket youth hunts that open before general season. And really the idea there is just to give kids the opportunity to a better opportunity at harvesting. And the way the system up here works is whoever the supervising adult is in the field, that the harvest that the kid takes counts against your tag. So like in this case, when Clayton harvests his sheep, I cannot hunt sheep for the rest of that 2023 season. And then usually there's some variation across species, but usually those hunts start 2 weeks or 10 days before the general season, and then they usually run a week long or five days. So general sheep season in Alaska opens August 10th. Youth season opens August 1st, and it's just a 5-day season, runs August 1st to the 5th. So certainly don't, like, you expect that maybe there's some other parents or some other groups out there. But yeah, when we got to the parking lot and there was a fairly large group and a number of side-by-sides, we were kind of like, all right, what is going on here? And as it turns out, so we're in the Wrangell Mountains. We're in the Wrangles, you have the park side, which unless you're subsistence, you can't hunt the park side. And then you have the preserve side, which you can hunt the preserve side. But a lot of those trails are still maintained by the National Parks System. And so what it ended up being is they had a group of trail workers out there that were doing repairs on the trail system. And that's why there was all these side-by-sides and these guys, because it was a Monday morning and they had had the weekend off and they're showing back up. So once we kind of discovered that on the ride in, we were like, oh, that's a relief.
Yeah. Clayton, how did it feel once you guys unloaded the side by side? You take that, you know, ways on the road, or sorry, on the trail, and then you're kind of getting to where you're in the mountains, you're more in sheep country, you know, probably starting to hike, or where you set up camp. Was it pretty gorgeous to be back in there?
Yeah, there was a lot more mountainy mountains than where we go. Like where we go moose hunting, it's more like hill type mountains, but there was a lot more mountains where we were going. And well, we started out on the trail on this creek, and it's like a giant river that's split into like all these little creeks that weave through each other. So you have to cross that like 100 times before you can actually get to where you start climbing the little hill to get. And it took, how long did it take us to get? Probably 2 hours to get to where we started hiking.
On the four-wheeler?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably close to a two-hour ATV ride to before you start hiking.
How was the hike itself?
It was tough. It was the first day. First day wasn't as hard as the other days because it's kind of like you're going more downhill, except, well, we did have to go a little bit uphill at the beginning to get to a lake. But then once you start going from there, you can kind of, it kind of just goes downhill from there, which that was the first day, which wasn't that hard.
Yeah, where you, where the trail ends or where the UTV use ends, you're about 3,500 feet elevation. You're still in some timber, but you're kind of right on the edge of the alpine. And then you follow a creek bed up, gain some elevation, and you top off at about, it's probably around 2 miles. You top off about 4,000 feet. And where you top off, my descriptions are not going to do this justice, but where you top off, you come through these limestone rock outcroppings that have been just worn through the weather over the years, and you kind of side hill around them. And when you pop out at the head of a long drainage. That drainage is draining to the east, and it drains all the way down to the mighty Nabesna River. And when you pop out there, there's an alpine lake right at the head of that whole valley, whole drainage system. On the right-hand side of that lake, you've got a little ridge system that just runs all the way down to the lake. And on a still day, the reflection out of the lake up, you know, for that ridge be sitting there is just beautiful. You've got this like limestone pea gravel right in front of you that runs all the way down to the lake edge. And then on the left side, which would be the kind of the north, facing north, there's a bluff that skirts around the lake, and that's the direction you have to take to get past the lake. But you pop up there, you finally get above tree line. You see the lake. It was fairly still day, so good reflections in the lake. And it just, other than the fact that you got to cover some ground, you just want to sit down and camp there because it's such a beautiful, beautiful spot. It's also where where things first start opening up, so you can do a little bit of glassing there. And we had kind of determined, okay, when we hit the lake, that'll be our first stop, that'll be our first snack stop. And so we hit the lake, stopped, pulled out the spotting scope. But before we did that, what were you asking us when you saw the lake?
I want to go swim in the lake because at that point it didn't look like it was that cold. And then I ran down there and felt the water. It was like, yeah, it was cold, but I still wanted to go swimming.
You know, it's the first little grind, a couple miles to get up to the lake. You're it's Monday. It was July 31st. You know, mountain weather was, I don't know, it was probably somewhere in the 60s, mid 60s. up there, so you are a little bit hot. And he's like, "Man, can we go swim in that?" And it was, I think that was the first reminder kind of to me as a dad, and just one of the reasons, Mark, one of the reasons I enjoy being in the backcountry is it just slowing down, right? Like getting away from the pace of life, really simplifying the day-to-day things, right? Because you're living out of a backpack, you have limited resources, and just disconnecting, right? But one of the things that stood out to me on this trip, and there'll be different kind of key points throughout it, is just seeing the world again through a kid's eyes, or through a younger person's eyes. And I'm hot too. We've gained a little bit of elevation. And you know what? If I wasn't so focused on, okay, let's get the spotter out, let's see if we can see some sheep, then I probably too would have thought, hey, it'd be nice to take a dip, right? And so just seeing the world through a kid's eyes, are kind of like slowing myself down, even in a different way than I usually do in the backcountry, was something that stood out to me on different points throughout this trip.
Yeah, that's really good. I can relate to that, 'cause I'm sure I would be the same way. I would be excited to be there, grateful to be there, but yeah, I would be more focused on, I would be enjoying it, like you described that view and that setting, and that painted a good picture in my head, and I'm thinking, man, that's gorgeous. But in the midst of taking that in, I would still be more focused on, as you said, getting the spotter out than I would be jumping in a lake. So that's a cool example.
So we pulled the spotter out. What happened then?
We spotted seven, I think 7 feet, five. Are they called? What are the moms called?
Use.
Yeah, ewes, and three, no, five. Yeah, about, I think there was two or three little babies.
That had to be exciting to be seeing some sheep already.
At first, they looked like mountain goats, and they didn't really look like sheep, but then we got, well, that was in our binoculars, and then we got the spotting scope out, and they were sheep.
I know at some point on this day you guys had a storm roll through as well. In notes, you mentioned some hail. I'm curious how you felt about that, Clayton, being back in these big, big mountains and now having hail and a big storm run through. Is that scary at all?
Well, yeah, it was pretty scary. They were pretty big. They were about the size of small pebbles, and we had to face away from them. If you turned around, they'd pelt your face, and it hurt. They hurt a
Yeah.
lot.
Yeah, so when we were at the Alpine Lake, we pulled the spotter out. And like you said, there were some ewes and lambs kind of to the ridge system over to the north, northeast a little bit. And as a sheep hunter, like I was excited to see that because we could go into a whole topic about sheep numbers and some of the weather-related things around sheep populations being down. So anytime you're a sheep hunter and you're in the backcountry, you're seeing ewes and lambs, that gets you excited for the future of sheep hunting. But we also from the lake spotted a group of seven sheep. When you kind of see that many sheep, your first thought is, oh, they're probably ewes and lambs. But we threw the spotter on that group of seven, and they were all rams. And they were in the, they're basically at the head of a drainage that dumps into this drainage that we were going to walk down, and pretty much in the general direction that we were wanting to head anyways. And so I don't know about everybody else, but that got me excited because, like, all right, we're barely into this. We've got seven rams spotted. It's in the general direction we're going. So let's game on. Like let's start moving. It took a while to get over there. You're the hike kind of too. So you've got the Alpine Lake at the head of this long drainage that flows east and then kind of south down to the Nevesna River. And then northeast, you've got another little drainage system that dumps into that. And that's kind of the access for us up into sheep country, up into the mountains, and that's on the face of that is where we were seeing those rams. And so to get over there, it's still kind of you haven't gained enough elevation where you're really up in the rocks. You're still down on tundra. You're still working through blueberry bushes that for me are probably about knee high. For Clayton, they're probably about close to mid thigh or thigh high. And you can see out of the head of that drainage, this storm system that's just kind of like circling up in there. And you know, like, well, that's the direction we're going. Hopefully that blows through. And it's sometimes hard with all that open sky to know, like, is it going to blow this way? Is it going to blow another way? But we were covering ground to get over there, and that storm system hit us. And when it hit, like it wasn't like a little bit of sprinkles, and then let's put our rain gear on. It was like sprinkle, downpour. Oh, let's get our rain gear on. While we're getting our rain gear on, turns into hail, and the wind picked up. Like Clayton said, like the hail is, you know, the wind's blowing. You probably try to put your back to the wind. The hail's pelting you. We were half wet from how quickly it came before we could get all the rain gear on. I think at one point I grabbed Clayton and stuck him in front of me just because he was getting hammered with the hail. And I think at one point he said, "Dad, it's raining Dippin' Dots." Yeah. And then, of course, after that, after that, there was probably close to an inch of hail covering the tundra, which was kind of neat to see, other than the fact that you're a little bit wet at that point. And then, of course, you know, after a storm like that, everything, all the bushes are wet, you know, and you're trekking through them.
Yeah.
And as a little boy, you know, you're trekking through it waist high, while other guys are trekking through it knee high. So it was a little bit of a grind to finish that day and get over through that to the entrance of that drainage system.
Yeah, that's a lot. I know that's on the next day, there was some initial stalk on sheep that didn't work out. Clayton, can you kind of tell me a little bit about that and dealing with this opportunity that it sounds like didn't work out? How did all of that happen?
Well, we camped that night on a rock type rock bed, and it was kind of cool. They were kind of cool rocks. They looked like lava rocks. They were really cool. So the next day we had dried up all our clothes off. Everything was dry, so we packed everything we needed to stock those seven sheep, and we crossed the little creek, and we started climbing that mountain, and they were kind of in the drainage of the mountain, and so we were kind of hiking up the right to them, so they couldn't see us. So we got up, it was probably an hour and a half, 2 hour hike until we got up to where we could pop out and look at them. So we got up there, we popped out. We thought there were two of them that looked almost legal, but we didn't quite know if they were legal. So that was sad. But there was one in there that they had, we call him Stumpy, because he only has one horn. And last year he had looked full curl, and this year and the year before that he had looked full curl. So we were there. We thought he might have been full curl, but we just didn't know. So if we go hunting this year and we see him again, we'll know that he's full curl and we'll probably shoot him. But yeah, that was cool seeing him with this one horn, and he looked all lopsided. It was really cool. And then they weren't legal, so we did see a hawk. It was like came right up to us. It was probably 5 feet away from us. That was neat. So
Yeah, we had to gain a fair bit of elevation to kind of get parallel with the, with that group of seven rams. And of course, with that many sheep, you there's eyes everywhere. So that was the first kind of big up and down climb for him. And then sucked some side healing and some crawling to get a look. And then of course, you know, once you get within range and you get the spotter set up and then you realize, yeah, there's nothing real, there's not really a shooter in here. That can be a little bit disappointing. I think back to my very first sheep hunt and some effort to close the distance to get a good look. And then when you finally make the determination, yeah, there's nothing legal in here. If you're not careful with the mental game, that can be really a letdown. There was one unique sheep in there, like you said, that we nicknamed Stumpy. Nicknamed Stumpy because on one side, he was broke off. He was broke off pretty close. And then, and when I say close, I mean, he maybe had like 4 inches of stump on one side. And then the other side, he wasn't full curl. He might have had him by age, but he was just too close to call. We did nickname him Stumpy, the one horn wonder. And so we had to back out of that. And I was kind of keeping an eye on Clayton as we worked back down to camp to pack up, because I knew the next step, since those rams weren't legal, and I knew that those rams pretty much hang out in the right side of that drainage, that we were going to need to go further up the drainage to the left to get into some different country. And I knew there was still a long slug ahead of us. And I don't know, how were you feeling after that stop? Were you discouraged? Were you?
Well, I was sad because we didn't get to shoot one, but I was also happy because it was the first day and I didn't really want it to end, and I wanted to go further back into the mountains. So I was sad, but I was still happy. I would have been happy if we shot that one, but I'm happy that we kept going because we got a different one that was bigger.
Yeah. And of course, in my mind, I know that I've got a kind of a set target of where we need to get to that day. And it was just kind of keeping an eye on his morale, because we had, we wanted to work further up that drainage, which kind of goes northeast. And then 2/3 up that drainage, there's a saddle. It's a long climb up the saddle, but it opens up to another drainage. And that's kind of where we anticipated there would be more sheep. And so we got back down to camp. Packed up base camp, and it was kind of a grind from there. We worked up to a really cool spot that's got a waterfall coming off the north side of the ridge, and we kind of had lunch around there. Of course, again, being mission driven, I said we'll eat lunch at the waterfall. And of course, in my mind, that's like, we're going to eat lunch around the waterfall, because if you hike a little bit past the waterfall, you're a little more elevation to look down the drainage. And so when we get to the waterfall, Clayton's like, we're dropping packs, we're eating lunch. And I'm like, no, we're going to go a little further. And he was starting to get pooped out. He was ready for lunch at that point. What was going through your head then?
I wanted to punch you in the face.
You wanted to punch me in the face.
I was so hungry. We had just climbed the mountain, climbed down, packed up camp, hiked probably a mile, maybe mile and a half. I was starving. I wanted to stop and eat lunch. And he says we have to climb this other hill.
So. I'm glad he thinks it was a mile and a half, because I think it was a little more than that.
Yeah. If there's one thing I learned about kids in the outdoors, not even like a big epic mountain sheep hunt, but just kind of anything in the outdoors, it's have snacks and feed them. I mean, that's definitely one thing that I've learned.
Yeah. So we had lunch, and basically where we had lunch, you could see the saddle that we need to cross over. And I told him that's the direction we were going, that the big push was to get over that. I think he gave me some wide-eyed looks. But we set out and grounded over the saddle. I think that saddle, I think the top of that saddle is somewhere around 5,000 feet, 5'2" or something, like 5,200. And you start out in that at the bottom around around 4,000 elevation. So yeah, it's 1,200 feet of gain. And you know, we'd done the stock in the morning. We'd covered some ground to get there. And so he was tired. I mean, at that point, I'm starting to get a little bit tired on a long uphill grind. But I remember, so I kept keeping an eye on him to make sure, like, is he doing okay? Is he at the point of quitting? Like, you know, what's his mindset? And every time I look back, he was still chugging along. One time I look back and, you know, you're on this big climb, and sometimes your mind starts to wander. I look back and he's got his trekking poles up in the air. He's like sword fighting some invisible dragon or something. So I thought, all right, we're still good. We're still in the game.
Yeah.
He's not down there sitting on a rock. And at one point we're hiking along on that climb, and I hear him go, "Whoa!" And so I look back like, did he slip? Like what? He goes, "That's the biggest wolf spider I ever seen." And again, it's kind of one of those reminders, like as an adult, you know, sometimes you're even though you're enjoying what's around you, you're so much in the grind or in the like, let's summit this and see what's on the other side, that those little things in life, like that big wolf spider running across your boot track or whatever, doesn't really stand out. And so that was another one of those moments where it's like, oh, you know what, like slow down a bit. So we hit the summit. You were wore out, but there's something that happened right after we hit the summit that kind of gave you some energy.
And we saw one sheep up to the right that wasn't legal. It wasn't even close to legal. So then we got sad. And then the two sheep came down that were a little bit closer, more on the close side to legal. They were probably about 6, maybe 7 years old. But they weren't legal. We figured that out pretty fast. And it was like you go down the saddle, you drop down, and it wasn't as far elevation as you go on the other side. So it was like, took us 5 minutes probably get down to the valley. And then there's like these humpy terrains, like it's tiny little hills. So I ran up there hoping to see, because the sheep were like on the right on the other side of that hump. So I was hoping to see how close I could get. I pop up and they're probably 50, 75 yards away from me. It was pretty cool. Those were neat little, that was neat.
Yeah, he looked back at me and goes, "Whoa, Dad, that's the closest I've ever been to a sheep." So I think whatever tiredness was in his bones when he saw those sheep, and he realized, oh, there's some sheep over here in this country, and then he got close to those sublegals, like that was a new burst of energy there.
Those encounters with wildlife, you know, whether it's an animal you end up harvesting or not, just those encounters and being in close is so fun and special.
Yeah, it really sticks with you. That you pop over that saddle and there's kind of a little bit of a valley that then dumps into another drainage that runs out to the north. And that after you pop over the saddle, that valley is just beautiful. Like there's no way to describe it. We camped in that valley that night, and to the north, the ridge on the north, there's another little saddle there that you can pop up into to view the drainage that you're going to drop down into. And so we set up camp and I was like, I'm going to run up there. I think it was probably 8 o'clock at night by this point. I said, I'm going to run up there, just spot where we're going, see if there's any sheep up there. And of course, Clayton's like, I gotta come too. And me and Jeff are like, no, You crawl into your sleeping bag. You're gonna rack out. But I ran up to that saddle, and you can go up to the saddle. You can't go over because it's rock face on the other side. But ran up there with the spotter, and that evening, and in within 15 minutes of being up there, I spotted three really nice sheep. And it's hard to describe, but when you've been looking at sublegals or banana rams or whatever, and you see a mature ram, it almost stands out right away, just the horn mass, the body mass. And so when I first got on with the spotters, I was like, oh yeah, these are some decent sheep here. So spotted those. They were really high elevation. The ridge system they were on was, I think, topped out at 7,900 feet or something. And they were in some gnarly country. So, you know, we're like, well, I was like, how are we going to access that? But whatever, like, we're seeing legal sheep. I went back down to the tent. I crawled in my sleeping bag. Jed was still awake, and he said, what'd you see? I told him what I saw, and Clayton kind of stirred some, and heard a little bit of the conversation, but he was tired. He was out of it. And so when you woke up the next day, what happened the next day when you woke up?
I woke up, and then I hadn't comprehended what happened the night before. So I kind of thought about what happened last night in the conversation. I was like, and then I really woke up. I was like, oh boy, the sheep over there. So then we got out of the tent and made breakfast. I remember I half ruined the jet boil because I tried to put a rock on it to see if I could make our bacon a little bit more warm, fry it, but nope, couldn't do that. And melted a little part of the jet boil. But so we got the water boiled, made oatmeal, and this little porcupine came right up from this little creek. It was so cool. It was like, it's probably within 20 yards of us. It was really cool. Made little squeaky sounds. It was really cute.
Yeah, so we had sheep to go after. So we packed camp up. It was still a bit of a route to get over to him. And the way the approach is because you came over that big saddle, you've got quite a bit of elevation. So you actually drop quite a bit of elevation to get down to the drainage that the sheep were on the other side of. And kind of the way down there is through this narrow, in between these two narrow rolling hills that are like grass covered. And it's fairly quick descent. And there's old, you know, game trails that you follow going down there. And going down is the fun part, right? Like there's kind of these steps just from years of animal trails and stuff. Coming up, though, is what the challenge is. And in fact, we nicknamed those on the way up. We nicknamed those the Stairs of Mordor, because coming out of there with a full pack is a little bit of a grind. But we were working down to the valley floor, and there's kind of the rolling, it's kind of old rolling glacier moraine. So you've got little scree piles, you know, that you're working over. And some of those have a little bit of vegetation on the side or vegetation in the valley. And then we got to one where it was pretty deep ravine. So we kind of had to, but it was narrow. It was maybe foot and a half wide or whatever. So you kind of had to hop it. So Jed got across. I got across. Clayton goes to hop it. What happened to you?
Well, I didn't quite make it. I got on the other side and then I tripped and it fell down like 10 feet into this like pit. It was like a literal pit. And my hat fell off and fell like another 2 feet. And I was really sad. So, but we got out of there and I had my trekking pole and I got my hat out. So I was happy. I almost lost my hat and that was my favorite hat.
Yeah, he falls like back first, catches on a willow branch, falls back first. And I heard it. So I looked behind. And so he's like laying face up, kind of like caught in this ravine. I mean, you know, it was 2 feet below him to the ground. And I look down and he just goes, "Help."
Help.
So we pulled him out of that. There was a really nice moose shed in that area too, but we were focusing on getting the sheep, so we kept trekking. But yeah, we got down by about noontime. We got down where we were parallel. We got down to where the sheep were right above us in the ridge system. It was just around noon. We were starting to run short on water because we were counting on water in that creek system, and there wasn't. It hadn't had enough. Like, we get a fair amount of rain in August. It was early August. We hadn't had the rain. So I was a little bit worried, like, all right, where are we gonna source some water? But we stopped below the sheep. We pulled the spotter out. They were in some nasty country, and we were kind of judging, like, all right, are we gonna wait to see if they come down? What are we gonna do? We ate lunch down there. They also kind of had us pinned. There was so the valley floor that we're in is about 4,000 feet elevation. The top of the ridge system that they were on tops out at like 7,200 feet. So it's some steep country. In fact, as you're sitting at the bottom viewing them, like, it's pretty up and down. And one of the sheep was kind of bedded on a pinnacle up there. So if we did much moving around or tried to approach at that point, he was going to be honest. But in the spotter, he looked really good. So I was excited about the fact that, hey, we've got a really, really good looking sheep here. But we're just going to have to either wait for them to come down or wait for them to move somehow, because we don't have any approach. And so we ate lunch. Clayton said that was the best meal of the trip because he had some instant mac and cheese that we made up. And we were kind of debating, well, we need to find some water. Should we wait these sheep out? Should we find some water? What are we going to do? We knew that probably a little further up the valley, not even a quarter mile, was an area that me and Jed had camped in before. And we knew that there was some water that kind of came out of the mountain there. So we're like, well, let's work up there and let's get some water, and then we'll make a plan from there. So we found the old campsite. Luckily, back in the trees coming out of the mountains, there was a stream of water. So Clayton topped us all off with water while me and Jed were spotting the sheep. And at that point, that ram had kind of come off that pinnacle and stepped behind it out of our view. And right in front of us was a rock chute, a shale rock chute. And again, like, this is pretty fairly steep country. And there's this rock chute. To the right of it is kind of this pinnacle that he was bedded on, that he was looking down. He stepped backwards out of our view off that pinnacle. We were kind of picturing that there might be a little bowl in there that he stepped into, and there was two other rams out of sight with him. At the top of the chute, there was this lone banana ram that was hanging out by himself. And if we were going to make an approach, we're going to have to go up the chute and then kind of just past the pinnacle that ram was bedded on. There was a little bit of a saddle that we thought we could pop up on, look down into this bowl that we thought they were in, and potentially have an opportunity. But I was a little worried about that lone ram that was kind of at the top of the chute, because he might bust us. Was he far enough away from the other rams that they wouldn't notice? And so we kind of hem-hawed around about that for a while, and then finally was like, well, we're gonna attempt this. Sometimes in the past, I'm a little more conservative in some of those stocks, which has its negatives and its positive. And that's come to bite me in a negative way sometimes. And so we're like, well, we're gonna risk this. So we started up. It was I think I looked at my watch, it was 12:30 when we started up this Shell Scree shoot. We were kind of hugging the left hand side to stay as much out of view of that lone ram that I was worried about spotting us. And it's just, Mark, it's just hard. You probably know this. It's just hard to judge some of those scree shoots, how well the footing's going to be, mm-hmm. how some of that shell is solid and you can get a good kick and you can cover ground fairly quickly. Some of that is just like so much effort to, two steps to make one. And when we started into that, it was a grind. It was like the two steps to make one. Yeah. And it felt like it took forever. Of course, you're going for an animal. So it felt like it took forever to get up there. What did you think about that climb?
It was pretty sketch. It was one of the probably the toughest hike I'd ever done. And it took us a long time to get up there.
And it's one of those scree shoots where you're dislodging rocks, right? And so you either got to have your buddy parallel with you or real close to you, mm-hmm. Or you got to be spread out. And so, you got three guys trying to navigate up this. And so we took off about 12:30, and it was shortly after 3 when we got parallel with kind of that rock outcropping that ram had been on. We had actually wanted to go a bit further to look over to the right where the rams had dropped off to. But at that point, it's like we're 2.5 hours into this. We've been making a lot of noise. I lost sight of that lone ram that was at the head of the chute. And we came to a spot where there's a little ramp to the right that was probably 10 yards up that would put us about parallel with where we'd last seen those rams drop off. And so Clayton saw that. He's like, hey, Dad, can I shoot up this? And I was like, you know what? Like, yeah, we've been at this 2.5 hours. I don't know where those sheep are. We've been making noise. It's a little bit of that mental game of like, are they still in here? Have they heard us? What are we going to do? So he works up that little path to the right. It's steep country. There's a place wide enough for him to throw his pack. So I haven't put his pack down and I'm kind of standing by his pack so it doesn't roll down the mountain. And he climbs up the other 10 feet to peek over the edge. And you peeked over the edge. What did you see when you peeked over the edge?
I saw a white rock and I thought for a second, I was like, that was a sheep, but it didn't end up being a sheep.
Yeah, so he peeks over the edge. He gets excited for a second because he sees a white rock, but then it turns out to be nothing. I peek over the edge. It's like a 40-foot drop right over the edge. And I'm like, whoa, let's be careful here. And at the same time, we both catch movement up the hill from us, like directly up top of the chute. And I look up. I knew that there was that one lone ram up there. I look up. I see one ram weaving through the rock outcroppings. Then I see another one. And so, like, instantly I knew, okay, these rams that were down here, they've worked up to that other ram. They've probably heard us. That's why they've worked up there. And then all of a sudden I see a third one work through. So then it was like confirmation, like, okay, they are up above us here. At that point, Jed was right behind me. He'd come up the little path so things kind of turned into a controlled scramble, right? Jed was getting his binos on them. We still had to determine, all right, what ram is what? There's four rams up there now. They are on the move because they know we're down there. They're not on a dead trot. They keep popping up on little rock outcroppings to get a view at us. So I pop my backpack down, like right on the edge of the ledge that drops off 40 feet. Right there, there was a little spot for Clayton to sit down. How'd that spot work out?
It was almost perfect. It was like a perfect seat, and like the position was absolutely perfect.
And so he plops down there. I'm unpacking the 6 hour cross, opening the stock up. I hand him the rifle, and then I hand him the clip, and he puts the clip in. Jed's still trying to get good glass through his binos on what sheep is what. I think I pulled 2 dry bags out of my backpack, and Clayton threw one up above for a front rest, and then threw one under his shoulder for a rear rest. But the way it worked out was almost just perfect for how the setup was. He's got this little rock ledge kind of going uphill to hold the level. And so he gets set up in the gun. Me and Jed are in the glass. We're trying to judge like what ram is what. They're on the move a little bit. Jed calls out, he's got the Swaro rangefinder binos. So he calls out some yardage. I think the first yardage he called out was 380, which, I didn't set out on this hunt for my kid to be taking a shot at 380, but it's kind of like, well, here we are. This is the opportunity. It's, these rams are probably going to cross over. So if we can get a good rest, if we can make this happen, we'll attempt this. So Jed calls out 380. I told Clayton the adjustment, and I'm kind of in the glass, glancing down, peeking out of my glass, glancing down to him. I said, 380, go up 2.5 MOA. And intuitive, just like perfect. I see him dial up 2.5, and I kind of glanced like, all right, yeah, he got the right dial. And then the rams haven't quite settled yet, so they're still working through these rock outcroppings and working their way up. So we know that they're gonna attempt to cross over, although it's really steep country. But in the moment, we didn't maybe realize how steep it was up there. And then Jed calls out again. He says 425, and I told Clayton, all right, that's 3.2 MOA, and I glance down again. He makes the perfect adjustment, and he's in the scope. And actually, that scope might have had better optics than our binos, and we didn't really have the time to set up a spotting scope. So he's in the scope, and the lead ram steps out on a rock pinnacle. And Clayton says, I've got the front one. Am I good? And me and Jed are still trying to like figure out what ram's what, where we at, who's the lead one. And so I was like, no, hold off. And he kind of stepped down. Second ram stepped up. He goes, all right, I got the second one. Let me know if I'm good. And we were still kind of scrambling to see which ram was what. Finally, the lead ram steps back up on a pinnacle. Jed said, all right, it's the far left one. Clayton says, far left? And Jed says, yes, far left. And I think he probably had to make a slight adjustment to get on that one. But he made the adjustment, and that ram, that lead ram, as they do sometimes, he paused for a long time. Well, I say a long time. It's probably, 30 seconds, long enough for Clayton to get on him, for us to identify, yeah, that's the one. Jed says, far left. I hear Clayton say, I'm on the far left. Am I good? And I said, yes, you're good. And then he goes, okay, I'm going hot. And I glance out of my binos. I see him click the safety off. And, you know, as a dad, I was just like, in that moment, even before that shot went off, I was just proud of like the composure and the control where he's in the scope. He's got the animal. He's not so worked up that he can't make these scope adjustments. I mean, I think I probably would have been more shaky than he was at the moment. And then, you know, he's about to crack off this 425-yard shot. And when Jed said, far left, you're good. He's like, okay, I'm going hot. Pops the safety down. 5 seconds later, the shot rings. And I knew the first shot was a good shot because, you know, sometimes those animals, you see their front legs buckle kind of. They kind of go down before the front legs kind of go down before they catch themselves. So heard the smack, saw the buckle, and I was like, all right, that was a good hit. Now, at the moment, Jed was thinking a few steps ahead of me, and he was wanting that ram actually to tip off that pinnacle because he noticed how steep it was getting up there. So he goes, put another one in him. So Clayton racks another round, fires it. That one actually threw some rock, which made us think that he missed, but actually I think it was a pass through and hit some rock. And so anyways, that ram went down right there where he was at. And there was a little bit of hooting and hollering. What was going through your head?
I was excited.
Yeah.
I was shaking way more after the shots than before the shots. But I was also kind of sad because we didn't get a video of it.
Yeah. That is impressive. It sounds like you just did such a great job of staying calm, thinking through everything, being patient. That's hard to do.
Yeah, I know some grown men that would struggle with that. So I was pretty happy with just the composure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're excited. Mission accomplished. But it took us, I think that shot happened around 3:25, 3:30. It took us 2 more hours, Mark. 2 more hours to get up to that ram.
Wow.
Just with the way the shell in that chute was and how steep some of the country was. But when we finally got up there around 5:30, picture perfect spot for taking pictures. Like I think I might have sent you one of those pictures, but just the background, yeah, the back view was just spectacular. And even though it was a grind to get up there, like I think the picture made it all worth it.
How did it feel to put your hands on that sheep, Clayton?
I was thinking that it was gonna be more like coarse and not that soft, but it was actually surprisingly soft. I thought it was gonna be like more whiskery type hair, but yeah, it was actually pretty soft.
Yeah, they are soft. They're cool.
It was in a bit of a hairy spot to clean. You want to talk about what it looked like? There was basically a ledge to put your backpack, enough space for two guys to stand to process, and then a little spot for a third guy to sit down. And we kind of sometimes rotated through taking a little break, but it was there wasn't much room to work. And in fact, I hadn't just because of the hike out, I hadn't planned on caping this animal out. We just planned on doing a Euro mount. And before we started processing, Jed's like, so we're keeping the cape? And I was like, well, we hadn't really planned on it. And then Jed says, well, you know, you can get some money off of that, which I've done before, you know, sold some shoulder capes. And Clayton goes, how much? What did he say?
He said that you can get literally $300 to $400.
Yeah, it's like usually you can get $300 to $400 off of that. And Clayton looks up at me and goes, "If I pack this cape out, can I have it?" And I was like, "Absolutely."
That's awesome, Clayton.
If you pack this cape out, you can have the money for selling it. And so he's like, "All right, I'll pack it out." So we caped her out. You know, by the time we caped it out, deboned it, all of that, we were starting down that chute at 9, just shortly after 9, like 9:15 or something. And with heavy packs, it was a bit sketch getting down. There were some narrow spots where you had to send one person at a time because you're dislodging rocks, right? And so there was a couple spots where it's like, "All right, Clayton, you got to go down the chute. When you get through it, find a solid spot on the left. Call up to me that you're clear." And I think it was probably 1 o'clock. It was between 12 and 1 when we finally hit the river bottom again. By that point, we had pulled out the headlamps. Jed had actually broken one of his trekking poles, which is just one of those like big dishearteners in the backcountry when you crack a trekking pole.
Yeah.
And he had, I think he'd actually taken a little bit of a spill when he cracked that trekking pole, so he had a gash in his arm. So we were happy to hit the valley floor. We were happy to get off that mountain, you know, and looking back, like from the bottom, if that sheep had been where it was at, where we ended up taking it, if he had been up there and we had been on the bottom, we probably wouldn't have made the attempt. But you know, in the moment, the way things were playing out, that's just the way it worked out.
I want to ask a million more questions and things, but in the interest of time, I just want to make sure I hear from you, Clayton, on looking back at this type of trip now, looking back at the hunt, the time you spent with your dad, how hard it was. How do you feel about it now? What are, and when you think of those memories and that experience, what comes to mind for you?
I was very surprised that I was able to get, like, if you had told before the hunt, if you told me that that I was going to hike up that mountain and shoot sheep on that mountain that far, I would have said, "No, there's no way I could do that." But after, I was extremely surprised that I was able to do that. But it was, I also got the money for the cape, which was fun.
What are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with that money?
I bought a GoPro with it.
Oh, cool.
Nice. And I have a YouTube channel now.
Do you really?
Yep.
You'll have to send it to me. That's cool.
Yeah, I remember on the pack out at some point, he said, "Dad, if you would have told me that we were going to go that far back, that I was going to go that far up, that we were going to, you know, do all these things, I would have said, no way, like, it's not possible." But he said, "You know, just one day at a time," and we did it. We got back here. So that was kind of a good reflection to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important to remember, Clayton, for like when you look at hard stuff in the future, it's intimidating and it's like, well, maybe if I just start and go a little bit at a time, what I think is impossible is actually possible. That's cool, man.
Well, Mark, we could drag this on with more and more details, but I think just a couple other highlights were on the pack out. One night we roasted the sheep ribs over the fire, and that was very memorable. It's nice to eat, you know, fresh meat for a change from Mountain House. And so I think that's something that roasting ribs over a willow fire, something that sticks out in my mind. Both Jed and Clayton are kind of really into Lord of the Rings. And so they were throwing around jokes about meat being back on the menu and we ain't been eating nothing but stinking Mountain House for so many days. And so that was a fun moment too.
Yeah.
And then on the hike out on the last day, you know, it's just a grind. You're going back through the tundra blueberry bush, and it just, you know, it's just a mental game at that point. And at one point, Clayton was lagging behind a bit. Me and Jed stopped, we're resting. He catches up, and he rests for a few minutes, and then he goes, and then he takes off in front of us. He goes, "Come on, you old man, I'm tired of waiting on you." And me and Jed just bust up laughing.
Yeah.
The real mission on that last day is we wake up that Friday. Yeah, it's Friday morning at that point. And he's like, "All right, what time do we have to be at the Alpine Lake in order to swim, in order to take a dunk?" And, you know, I'm still like him hawing around, like, do I really want to do this? Like, do I really want to commit to this? But we did. We said, all right, we got to be coming around the lake at 2 o'clock. We got to make pace to be there at 2 o'clock if we're gonna dunk in the lake. And we were on pace to make that, especially after the old Min comment. Except we got sidetracked by a wolf. There was a wolf we saw, and we had a little debate about is wolf season open? Is it not open? Would we want to take that on? Come to find out later, it was open, but we passed on that wolf. But that was just kind of another one of those like icings on the cake. You're in the backcountry.
Yeah.
Had a great experience. And then you see this wolf. But the wolf set us behind for making the Alpine Lake at 2 o'clock. I think we hit the Alpine Lake like 2:20. Clayton's like, "No, the wolf is not my fault. We're plunging." And so we did. We took the hiking gear off, threw the long johns on, went down, plunged in the lake. And really, you know, you're hot, you're sore, you're tired, and actually it felt really good. And I'm glad he made us do it. It felt really good. What did you think about the polar plunge in the lake?
It was really, really cold. Also, you had to wear it hurt to walk on the ground on the lake, because the lake ground was like pure rock.
Yes, and
so I had pebbles. Had to wear my Crocs on there, and all the rocks are getting in your Crocs. But side note, Crocs make the whole world of difference when you go sheep hunting.
Yeah.
Crossing the creeks and everything, they make a whole world of difference. When you're getting up in the middle of the night and you have to go to the bathroom or get some water, they make the whole world of difference.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, so hopefully there was no random hikers that were watching three sweaty boys plop in the lake, but it was definitely a memory that'll always stick in your mind. And then I think to top it all off on the drive out, on the ATV drive out, the trail kind of takes a bluff that looks down into another creek drainage for a bit. And as we were coming through there, there was a sow with three cubs down there digging for roots in the creek bed. And it just, I just kind of paused as we spotted those and just thought, you know what, like, I'm very lucky, very, very fortunate to have these type of experiences, to do these with friends like Jed and do this with my son. And it was just kind of the icing on the cake to pause long enough to think about just how fortunate we are to have the means to do these things.
Absolutely. That's special. Well, thank you guys for sharing the story with us. And Clayton, I hope that, you know, this is something you can cherish for years to come. And I personally wanted to hear this story, and I know that a lot of people listening will want to hear it. And then I think it's cool that you'll be able to go back to this in the future and kind of relive this story and hear about it, because it's very, very special to be able to do something like this. And then, as your dad just said, to do it with your dad, to do it with good friends. That's awesome. So I'm excited for you and proud of all the effort you put into it. That's super cool.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this is what hunting's all about, right? Is not only the harvest from the land, but the relationships, the experience, the connecting with where your food comes from, and And yeah, just very, very blessed, very blessed.
Well, that is a wrap. What cool lifelong memories for Caleb and Clayton. I hope you enjoyed hearing about their story and were maybe inspired to get out with your kids, nieces, nephews, friends, family, and more. All of us as hunters would certainly benefit from bringing other young hunters along, showing them the amazing experiences that they can have in the outdoors. And I hope that this story today helped inspire you and informed you on how to do that. If you have anything for us, send an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. And if you want to make sure you receive all future episodes of this show automatically, be sure to hit subscribe or follow in whatever podcast app that you're using, and we'll talk to you soon.